The Church Media Podcast, episode number 48, Raising Up Leaders with Shane Duffy, part 2. Let's do it.
Hey there. Welcome to the Church Media Podcast.
The definitive podcast for creating dynamic experiences and building solid production teams at your church.
Video, audio, lighting, stage design, volunteer culture, and more.
You can find the show notes for this episode at 1230media.com/podcast.
And now, broadcasting from the heart of the South, here's your host, Church Media Coach Carl Barnhill.
Welcome to episode number 48 of the Church Media Podcast. I'm Carl Barnhill. Thank you so much for listening this week. This is the definitive podcast for helping you create dynamic experiences and build solid media production teams at your church. This week, I welcome back Shane Duffy to the show. Shane is the executive pastor at New Spring Church. He's been at the church since 2003, and he oversees the entire staff team at New Spring. That's over 400 people under his care. If you missed last week's episode, go catch up. It's episode number 47. Just go to 1230media.com/podcast for that episode, or you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Shane shared some incredible wisdom and knowledge when it comes to raising up leaders on your team. So go catch up on that episode. That's episode number 47. Let's dive right into part 2 of my interview with Shane. When we left off last week, Shane was giving us 10 leadership principles from the Bible. So you'll hear the last 5 here in a second, along with Shane's list of 5 things every leader should be. All right, here we go. Part 2 of my exclusive interview with New Spring Executive Pastor Shane Duffy.
This is an exclusive interview from 1230 Media and Carl Barnhill. Get shareable content and free resources for your team at 1230media.com/podcast. Here's Carl now.
I'm learning so much, and I said under you in this class, and even as you talk through it again, I'm like, oh, man, that is so rich and so good. All right, let's move on. What's your number 6?
Okay, well, numbers, I think, 6 through 10 all come from the same passage of Scripture, and it's John chapter 21, verses 15 through 23. Again, your listeners familiar with the Bible will know this story. This is where Jesus restores Peter. You know, Peter had denied him 3 times, and basically, Peter and the rest of the guys are back in Galilee. They're out fishing, and Jesus shows up on the shore. Simon goes to him, I'm sure sheepishly, feeling bad for having denied him, and then Jesus just goes through the process of saying, hey, do you love me, Peter? And he says, yes, Lord. Well, then feed my lambs. And he says, well, do you love me? And he says, yes, Lord. And then take care of my sheep. And then he says, you know, Peter, do you really love me? And he says, you know this, Lord. And he says, okay, Peter, then feed my sheep. He goes on to say to Peter, now that I've restored you, basically, I'm going to ask you to do things you never thought you'd have to do. They're going to be really difficult at times. And so Peter, in the wind of this, turns around and sees his buddy John walking around. He points at him and says, hey, well, what about this guy? And Jesus turns back to him and said, don't you worry about him. If I want him to live forever, what's that to you? I need you to follow me. And so from that story, 5 more principles really emerge. The first one, this would be our number 6, is number 1, I shouldn't quickly give up on those I lead. I need to pray and ask God if the fight for them is worth it. And what I mean by that is, again, when you're as a leader, you're going to be in situations where things don't go the way you want. People won't perform the way you would hope they would have. And again, it's real easy to give up on people. And I love this example from Jesus where he didn't give up on Peter. He made his way back to Peter because he knew there was a greater plan for Peter. Peter was going to be the one that preached on the day of Pentecost and see thousands of people respond to the gospel. And so in that knowledge, he was sensing, he knew that the Lord wanted him to fight for Peter. And so for me, the way this has played out over my professional life is, very simply, there can be times and situations or people that don't go the way I want. And again, the easy thing to do and what most leaders will do is say, well, I'm just going to cut bait. But I don't want to be driven just by someone's actions. I want to be driven by what God's telling me, because he's placed me in a role of leadership over this person for their benefit. So the question is not, is my frustration going to dictate when their time is up? It's if God's going to remove the desire for me to fight for them, is going to determine whether or not it's time to do something else. And again, so the listeners know, I'm not saying you hang on to everybody that's bad. There's always times to create change. But we shouldn't lead with that. We should lead with the heart to fight for them, to think that the distance between where they are now and where they need to be is my ability to lead them there. At the end of the day, as a leader, my posture has to be wherever they are that isn't good and where they need to be, which is best for them, the difference maker in their life is my ability to lead them. God's put me there, so I want him to be the one that says it's time to move on, not just a situation or circumstances. So that's number six. Number seven is this. I need to give special attention to those who are new to the team to make sure they get all they need to grow. I need to give special attention to people who are new to the team to make sure they get all they need to grow. And this comes from how Jesus led Peter through the three stages of restoration. You know, he said, feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep. And so this is a whole other conversation, but that's basically how you build church. That's how you cover a church. Feed my lambs. Reach people who are new, who don't even know me, who don't even understand that they are sheep. Go out and preach the gospel to them and reach them. And when you do, the second is take care of my sheep. Take care of them. Make sure that you're taking care of them so that they grow like they need to. And the third level is feed my sheep. It means it's a responsibility in ministry. Your job is to feed people, help them take their next, get them to green pastures so they can grow in their walk. But the importance here is that for Peter, he was about to plant church, right? He didn't know that. He didn't know there was going to be Pentecost. He didn't know there was going to be a time for him to preach and see people get saved. But Jesus was implanting in him specifically the steps necessary to do so. For leaders, we often make a false assumption that the people on our team know exactly what they need to do to win. And so I'm reminded when I think of this story and this principle that it's my responsibility to teach the people on my team exactly how they win, why we're doing what we're doing, how their particular role benefits the team or benefits the organization, and the things they need to do to actually achieve success. And a lot of leaders get frustrated because the individual goes in various directions and not the one you wanted, and it's simply because you didn't tell them. You didn't take the time to tell them. And I've learned through bad leadership over the years that if I will take the time, every minute spent on the front end saves you an hour on the back end. So we need to all take time to spend with our newest people in particular, to show them exactly how they fit on the team and how they win, so that as they grow, they'll be able to know what they need to do to get where they need to go. So that's number seven. Number eight is I must care more about how the team is doing and who they are becoming than what they're doing. I need to care more about how the team is doing and who they are becoming than what they're doing. Now, in my context, or really in any believer's context, whatever we're doing for work is not because we were, you know, skilled or educated to do it. That's part of it. But really, as a believer, God's promised to finish the work he started in you. His ultimate purpose for all of us is to become more like his son. And so wherever we are, whatever we're doing, that's the place that God has deemed the best place to make us more like Jesus, to grow us during whether it's a season of time or forever. And so what I want to do is I want to make sure I'm investing into who people are becoming as a believer more than the role they play. Because I believe if I'm investing into who God is trying to make them become and how they're doing spiritually, emotionally, relationally, financially, physically, all those kind of things, if I spend my effort there, then that's going to create in them the ability to do what God's gifted them to do.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Do you feel like once you pour and invest in who people are becoming, most of the time the tasks kind of take care of themselves? because they're more invested, they're more they have more ownership in the process, or they know that you have their best interest in mind. Do you find that that would be the truth, that the tasks just kind of take care of themselves if you really invest in the person more?
Well, they do because at the end of the day, people either stay a part of an organization or leave an organization based on their leader, not the vision of the organization or not the difficulty of the job. It's how they relate to their boss, and so or how they relate to their leader. And so if they know I'm investing effort into making sure their life is as good as it can be and helping them take next step, even difficult ones, because this doesn't happen through, you know, always happy, clappy conversations. A lot of this happens through difficult conversations, confrontational conversations. Then people are going to, just like we gravitate toward the Lord, the more he drives into us who he's trying to make us to be, I think we're galvanized, our team really galvanizes around us when we see we're investing in what we're doing. And if I go back to, you know, number seven, the reality is if I've spent the time teaching them on the front end how to win, then they're going to know how to execute whatever they do. And I don't have to spend a lot of time on training tasks anymore. I just have to spend my time on growing people. And so absolutely, that's a correct statement.
I think that you really just dropped a bomb there when you said that people don't leave an organization because of the task, they leave because of their leader. Do you think a lot of the leaders don't feel that responsibility as much? Or if we knew that a little bit more or thought about that more, do you think it would place more responsibility or weight or feeling on me as the leader, knowing that their future is almost in my hands in a way? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well... Oh, yeah. Well, it should. Yeah. You know, and I don't know, you know, it's hard for me to say, but I just say based on my experience, both in marketplace and church, not just our church, but, you know, we get the opportunity to work with many churches all over. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, is true that if you come across a leader that has a lot of turnover on their team, and they're always wondering, well, what's the problem? I can't keep anybody. Well, you know, what's the common denominator? You. You know, and so the reality is, if we understand, one, that we are, you know, we even talked about the principle, the second principle of Psalm 78, that we're supposed to shepherd people with integrity and skill. We're supposed to, you know, serve them in a way for their benefit. The reality is, as leaders, we need to know that they, whoever we're leading, marketplace or not, or church world, you've been given somebody to help. You're a shepherd. What does a shepherd do? A shepherd gets a group of people from one place to another the best way possible. And so if I understand that they're my responsibility, they're not just a means to an end, then it should add weight in my role, and I should see them as individuals, and I should understand that their success is dependent upon my ability to lead them. Now, again, that's not always true. I can be the best leader and have somebody that simply won't lean into what God's doing in their life. I can't control that. But as far as it depends on me, I don't want my effort and energy in leading them and loving them toward what God's trying to do in them be the reason that they would walk away.
All right, let's hit these last two real quick, 9 and 10, real quick.
All right, 9 and 10, very simply is number 9, I must push the team to grow. I must push the team to grow. We see Jesus, as soon as he restores Peter, turns and tells him, okay, now, Peter, it's about to get real. I'm about to ask you to do some difficult things. And so what I love about that's a reminder to me is you can love and lead and serve, but the reality is part of the leader's responsibility is to say, hey, now we're going to go into a place we haven't been before, or you're about to step into something you haven't stepped into before. I'm with you, but this isn't going to be easy. And so as a leader, I have to be willing to wear that hat and say, hey, this is where we want to go. You know, even in reading that, I don't like the word push. I would rather use the word pull. I don't want to pull the team group. I want to be a leader that gets places and takes people with me more than pushes someone where I don't want to go myself. So I don't want that word to throw people off. So let me rephrase it. Number 9, I need to pull the team in the direction it takes for them to grow. And then number 10 is I need to focus on my own mission and growth and not fall into the comparison trap. I need to focus on my own call of God, my own mission, and my own growth, and not fall into the comparison trap. The comparison trap is sneaky, and it's very destructive. And we see Peter almost fall into it in the story at the end of it when Jesus says, hey, it's going to be tough sledding for you. He turns and sees John and says, well, what about this guy? How tough is it going to be on him? And Jesus says, hey, don't you worry about that. What if I want him to live forever? He says, I need you to follow me. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that God has a specific call and path for me and for other people. And to compare or stand in judgment of others is to really stand in opposition to God. And we know, if you ever worked in a workplace dynamic where there's multiple people, multiple areas, and you know, you'll say, well, they don't know how hard my job is. Well, if I got to do what they did, then my life would be better. And it's so easy to fall into that trap. And what does it do? It distracts us from what God's asking us to do. And so just like Jesus looks at Peter and says, don't you worry about John. You follow me. I think he would look at each of us and say, quit looking around at what other people are doing. You don't know what my plan is for their life. But you do know what my plan is for yours, so I need you to follow me. So those are those 10 principles.
All right, so let me ask you this. I've been put in this situation a couple of times in my career, whether that be volunteers or staff, in that I'm in a place where I have to lead those older than me. Give me some wisdom here and some encouragement and insight into leading those older than I am.
So just chronologically older?
What do you mean? Just age?
Not just more experience, but just age.
Yeah, I would say both, even.
Yeah, well, so yeah, the principle, I think, or the answer to your question, I think, would be the same. What I found to be helpful is that if I'm in a situation, so I think it's 1 Timothy 4:12, basically Paul tells Timothy, don't let anyone hold your youth against you as you lead them, but set an example for them in love, speech, something else, and purity. There's 4 or 5 attributes that Paul tells Timothy. Hey, don't worry about how old you are, and but be a model in these things, the things you can control. So we can't control our age, and we can't control our experience, but we can control our actions and our attitude and our energy. And so what I would say is how do you lead the people around you that are older is, one, set an example for them, not in the fact that you're leading them. Set an example in how you live and how you interrelate to them. Because that's the kind of stuff that nobody can hold against you. They may say, well, you're wet behind the ears. You don't know what you're talking about. They may can say that, but they won't be able to say you're rude or self-absorbed or proud or any of those things. So you want to take those things off the table. And then the other thing is, the reality for young leaders out there, so important, is leverage the fact that you're working with somebody that's older and more experienced, because there's so much value in that. Be grateful you've got them on your team. And so the approach I would take, I remember my first the job in 1999 that moved me to Anderson, South Carolina, I started in a leadership role and had most of the people on the team were older than me. And I just had somebody give me good wisdom back then and said, hey, when you go in and tell everybody, hey, I know you've got more experience. I know you know this line of work way better than me. And for whatever reason, you know, I've been given this position. I want you to know that I don't find any value in the fact that, you know, I've got this position in a way that it makes me think I know more than you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to need you to help me learn what I don't know. And so I think if your posture is one to go in and say, hey, I want to know what you know. I'm we're all on one big team. I just happen to play this particular role. And the way we can work together is that you can help me learn what I don't know. It's going to be really difficult for someone who's older and more experienced to react negatively to the fact that you are seeking help from them in utilizing their age or their experience to help the team get better or help yourself get better.
Would you answer the same way for the reverse? What about those, what if I'm being led by someone real young and immature? How do I handle that?
Yeah, so if I'm the old guy, which nowadays I am the old guy, if I'm the old guy and I've got a young person leading me, again, you know, first of all, my posture makes all the difference in the world. the thing I have to discipline myself to do is to realize that for whatever reason, they've got that position and I don't. And I can't control that fact. But what I can control is whether or not I'm going to be a help or a hindrance to that person in the team. And so I can either, one, I would go to the person and say, hey, glad you're here. I've been doing this a long time. I got a little age on me. So I just want you to know out of the gate that I want to help in any way I can. If you can utilize anything I know or an experience that I've had, I want to make that available to you if you want to use it. But I wouldn't think it right for the older person going to say, hey, now that you're here, I'm going to school you up on this because I've been doing this a long time, so I'm going to show you how it's done. It's a very different posture. And so if you want to get further faster, you just want to make yourself available. If everybody, no matter what your age or your position, makes yourself available to the other people with the attitude that I want to help you get better, and I want to leverage everything I have to help you get better and to learn from you, whatever it is, because I'm going to just bet on the fact that if we're together, God's got something for us to learn from each other. If I just have that kind of attitude, it's going to make all the difference in the world. So no matter older, younger, or the same age, if we all have that attitude, then you're going to win as a team because everybody's trying to get the most out of everybody else without getting over on anybody else.
Now, you have this concept of 360 leadership. Now, we don't have to get too far in the details of this, but explain that concept and how you came up with it.
Well, first, it's not original to me. John Maxwell wrote a book about it a long time ago called 360-degree leadership. But it is something that I think is, next to listen to Jesus and do what he says, I think it's the most important leadership philosophy or principle that an organization can employ to actually have success. Because the idea is this, that everybody on the team, no matter what position they hold, has a responsibility to help lead the team. There's this thing I call leadership pressure. Everybody needs to understand that at times you're going to have to put leadership pressure on your boss, on your peer, and on your subordinate. And what leadership pressure is basically this: it's when God has shown you something that is true right now, or something that's coming soon that no one else on the team can see, then you have the responsibility to have a conversation with the person. So it's leadership pressure is having a conversation with someone when you can see something that's true now or something that's coming that maybe no one else can see, even the person you're talking to. Because at the end of the day, and again, I won't dive deep into this, if you go, and this isn't just a business or leadership philosophy, this is Ephesians 4. This is Ephesians 4, I think 14 through 15 says, you know, there's been these certain gifts given to the people in the church, and the purpose of those gifts is when they are working together in love, it is equipping the church to withstand whatever comes against it. So if you go read Ephesians 4, I think starting in verse 14 or 15 and following, that's what you're going to see. It's 360-degree leadership. It's saying every part, every gift, every person on the team, doesn't matter what your position on the org chart is, and you know, you don't have to be a leader on the org chart to be a leader on your team. It's a responsibility that there's just sometimes people are going to be going in a direction that isn't helpful for them personally or the team together, that for whatever reason, you're the only person that sees it. And so you've got to go to that person and not talk about them with the other people on the team. That's called gossip. You want to talk to the person that's impacted. And you got to realize maybe the reason that you're the only one that can see this is because God is testing you to see if he can trust you to make to have potentially difficult conversations for the benefit of other people. And the question is, are we going to do that or not, or just let dysfunction run, or just let somebody's life get away from them, or let the team lag behind what they could be, or are we going to do our part to help the team move forward? Because, I mean, there's studies out there about this. A frustrated team is unproductive, and usually frustration comes because of a lack of unity or bad leadership. And so if you're operating in this 360 mindset that I've got a responsibility to everybody on my team, not out of my personal preferences, things I don't dislike, but literally God-led issues that are keeping the team from moving forward because it's creating frustration, then I'm actually stunting the growth or the ability of the team. And so if we'll just employ this idea and love people enough to share with them what God's shown us in a very humble, asking questions for clarity, not making statements for condemnation type of way, employing all the fruits of the Spirit, then again, some of those conversations can be tough, but in the end, if they're righteous, they'll bear fruit and everybody wins. So in general, that's the concept.
And we apply that pressure, that leadership pressure, all three areas, up, sideways, and down, right?
That's it. Absolutely right. Obviously, down is more traditional. You think, well, I'm the leader. I tell people on my team what to do. There's a right and wrong way to do that, and there's certain things you got to make sure that you do. If you're leading down, you have the responsibility to teach your team, to equip your team, to listen to your team, to manage your team, manage in the sense that not to micromanage, but manage enough control enough to make sure they're going the right direction. And then you got to love your team. You got to love your team. If you're leading down, you got to teach, equip, listen, manage, and love. And the way you know you're loving your team well when you're leading down is that they never have to wonder about vision. They never have to wonder about why they're a part of the team, how their gift connects to the ultimate end you're looking for. Because everybody that's working and vibrant, they know how their gift is connected to a purpose, and that purpose is bigger than just their own ability to do something. And then if you want to lead sideways, your peers, you know, three words I like to remember is to do that right. The first word is reflect. And what I mean by that is you just need to go look in the mirror and say, hey, is this really a personal preference or a pet peeve, or is this really something I need to talk to them about? And then you need to talk to the person, not about the person. We already mentioned that. And then third, you need to love the person. And in this case, leading sideways means love's assumed the best. Go into those conversations thinking you just aren't clear or you may be wrong, but you're still willing to step into them. And then when you lead up, which is, you know, potentially the most difficult, you're putting leadership pressure on your boss. The first thing you got to think about is love. You got to love Jesus and love his church, at least in the context of church work, if you're in a marketplace where you got to love the Lord and love the organization more than you love the person. The only reason you talk to your boss about something or apply leadership pressure in that direction is because you realize that the Lord's wants you to help them in some way, or it's hurting the team. And then once you go through the grid of, okay, I'm loving and doing this, you want to protect them, meaning you want to have those conversations one-on-one in private most of the time, especially if it's a matter of integrity. The next thing you want to do is project unity and confidence. You want to go in saying, hey, I'm with you, I believe in you, but this is something we need to talk about. And then the last thing leading up, you want to trust. You want to trust God took you to it, and you want to trust God's work in that person. Those are the ways that we apply leadership pressure in each of those directions.
Now, in the couple minutes that we have left, I think all this just kind of cultivates or comes together as summarized in five things that we should be as leaders. And this is one thing that you talk about that I love, that we should be a lover, a learner, an example, a recruiter, and a developer. Hit on those real quickly.
Sure. So real quick, you know, a lot of things we're talking, they all kind of run together. It's just different ways to look at it. But again, five things that we have to be as a leader. You got to be a lover. You got to be a lover of people. You know, as a leader, again, going back to the definition I gave you at the beginning, it's other-oriented. You know, Romans 12:8 says leadership's a gift. If you read, I think it's the Revised Standard Version, it actually doesn't use the word leadership. It uses the phrase to those who give aid. And I love that because it's telling us that leadership is not about a place in the org chart or authority. It's about a commitment to help other people. So you got to be a lover. You've got to be a lover of people. You got to love seeing people succeed. You got to love seeing people take next steps, or you're never going to be a great leader. A learner, just basically means that, one, you need to be a learner in how do you develop new ways and understandings to help be better at what you're doing. But also you need to be a learner of the people you are around. You've got to be a student of the people on your team. You can't love somebody you don't know. And so that means you got to learn about people to make sure you're loving them in a way that's best for them. A leader is never going to win by having the team conform to how they lead. A leader wins when they conform how they lead to the individuals they're leading. If you've got 10 people on your team, you may have to lead in 6 different ways, or 10 different ways even. And a lot of leaders are resistant to that. They say, hey, it's either my way or the highway, where you're going to limit your ability to win. Because everybody's different, and as a leader, if I'm a learner, if I'm learning the people I lead, then I will modify how I lead to get the best out of them because I love them. Example, we got to be an example. The reality is, I mean, I think it's Hebrews 13:7 and other places, is he just tells us, hey, we need to be leaders worth imitating. And you can say a lot of words. It's kind of like, you know, if you've got kids, you know, we've all fallen victim to the phrase, hey, do as I say, not as I do. Well, as a leader, you won't get away with that for long. You absolutely have to realize that what you show, your attitude, effort, work ethic, attention to detail, all those sorts of things, that's what your team will look like. Your team is going to be a reflection of you. So we have to realize we're setting the example. We can't just leverage our place and tell everybody to do what we say and act the way we're telling you to act. They're only going to begin to do what we model. Recruiter just simply means that I need to always be paying attention to and see if there's somebody else I need to have as a part of my team. You know, as Life Church industry goes, if you're in something that's growing, that means more is going to need to get done, and I'm going to need more people. So when I'm out and about working in teams or going to various places or some of our campuses, I've always got my eyes open and asking questions and seeing kind of where people are. I want to always be recruiting to see if we need to add something to our team. And then developer, finally, just kind of self-explanatory, and we talked about this earlier with the D and lead, is I need to be a developer. I need to be someone who is developing as a leader myself, and I need to be someone who's creating opportunities for the people on my team to develop.
What about the myth that if I work myself out of a job, I won't have a job?
If you work yourself out of a job, then what you'll work yourself into more responsibility.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just never seen that happen. I am, over the last 11 years at New Spring, over time, I have given away most of my responsibilities at some point where, you know, technically I would have worked myself out of a job. But for whatever reason, when you're doing that, it's because there's more opportunity for you to get to. You know, one of the principles that I've learned that's related to this is if you don't have any margin in your life or in your work, that means you've got too much control. You're doing too many things. And so what we have to, as leaders, we have to be fighting to find margin, which means we have to recruit people into what we're doing so that we can find this thing called margin in our work and life. And here's what I found. When you create margin, you release some control. What's waiting on the other side of that is what God's been waiting to give you. Every time you create space in your leadership, God's going to fill it up with something else. Think about the parable of the talents. The 1, 2, and 5 talent folks, the one who returned to him what he gave him to begin with was punished. The one who returned him, you gave 2 and 5, gave back 2 more and 5 more. What did he do? He gave them more because he saw that they could be trusted. I don't think the one talent person was punished because they didn't return more talents. I think it's because they didn't try to work with what they had and make more. the 2 and the 5, I'm sure there were ebbs and flows in the market when they were trying to take the 2 and the 5 and do something with it. And God, I don't think, honored the fact they returned 2 and 5. I think he honored the fact that they did the best they could. They used what God gave them and tried to increase it. So if that principle is true, then if I'm working with what I have, trying to increase it and bring more people along, then I can trust that he's going to show up and give me more to do. I'm never going to run out of things to do as long as I'm doing well with the things God's already given me to do.
Well, man, these principles have been awesome. I really appreciate you spending so much time with us today sharing these things. How can we follow you online? How can we keep up with you?
Well, I'm not as big a player in social media world as I used to be, but I Twitter, Shane Duffy, S-H-A-N-E-D-U-F-F-E-Y, and Instagram is the same. Facebook, Shane Duffy, you can find me there. And I have a blog that's out there. I haven't added to it in a long time. It's just shaneduffy.com. So, yep, I'm out there a little bit, and I'd love to connect.
Awesome. Any parting thoughts, man? We really appreciate your time and all these things that you've shared with us today.
Nope, Carl, grateful for what you're doing. I love the way you're helping the kingdom advance through all the things you're doing, you know, this podcast included. So I'm grateful for that. And just a reminder for all of us, is that everything really does rise and fall in leadership. That leaders are gifted by God to help people get where they need to go. And what we need to remember, and that's such an important role, and the way we leverage it is important, because our ability to advance our church or organization is dependent upon our ability to steward this gift really well.
This week, we want to let you know about an incredible free resource for your team. The New Spring Network from New Spring Church exists to resource and equip church leaders with resources, coaching, and leadership events. They provide free ministry resources like children's ministry curriculum, sermon series and graphics, and church campus tours. To get access to these free resources and learn more, check out newspringnetwork.com.
Well, that's it for us this week. If you want to follow Shane, you can find him on Twitter at Shane Duffy. I'll put links to all this on the show notes page for this episode. Simply go to 1230media.com/podcast, click on episode number 48, and all those links and resources are right there for you. Next week on the show, Daryl Guillardier will be joining me. Daryl is the Digital Strategy Director at Brentwood Baptist Church near Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be talking about social media strategies for your church, and I'll ask Daryl some rapid-fire questions about Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, creating content for your church, and more. It's going to be fun and very, very informative. Don't miss it. That's next week on the show. As always, I want to thank my producer, David Michael Hyde. David is a contemporary composer and music producer for film and digital media. Go to davidmichaelhyde.com to find him there. He's got some new tracks you need to check out, too. You can also order custom scores for your next project. DavidMichaelHyde.com is his website. Thanks for listening this week. Go out there, guys, and create some incredible experiences this Sunday. I'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Church Media Podcast. Get the show notes for today's episode at 1230media.com/podcast. And be sure to rate and review this podcast in iTunes. For more free church media resources, visit 1230media.com. We'll see you right here next week for another episode of the Church Media Podcast.